Good morning. In a few minutes, Pastor Steve's going to come up and he's going to talk to us about the dangers of hurtful words and how important it is for all of us to love one another. In 1 Corinthians 13, Hey Doc, what are you doing? What are you doing?
It does not brag, it does not boast, it does not envy.
Well, that's true enough. Love is all around us. We should embrace it. We should capture it. We should never let it go.
Easy there, creepy McCreeperson. I mean, you sound a little stalkerish.
Stalkerish?
Yeah. Embrace it, capture it. Never let it go? I mean, you make it sound like love needs a restraining order.
Well, I'm just trying to talk about God's love the way you are.
Oh, no. See, I'm over here jamming on a sweet song about love.
Yeah, I love jam.
Hey, don't be mocking breakfast, okay? It's the most important meal of the day, all right? Yep. Let's do this. You got this? You sing.
All right, okay.
I'll play you sing.
Okay, all right. Love is not rude, it is not envy. What? You just saying love is not rude.
Okay. Neither is it tone deaf. Okay? Good heavens. Love not proud is patient. It does not boast is patient. What's so funny?
You said the word patient twice. Two times you said it.
So, and?
Well, yeah, 1 Corinthians 13, a lot of different words are used to describe love. I would think you could find a different adjective.
You know what? Look at me. Real love, okay, right here. Real love has a double dose of patience. Yeah, you wouldn't know that, though, would you? No.
Well, I just think that the people here want and deserve a good dose of biblical teaching. And not some hokey song.
Oh, I see. You just killed my soul. You know what? That's all. I'll go somewhere else where my music can be appreciated.
Good luck with that.
What?
No, nothing. So we talk about love. We sing about love. We preach about love and expect everyone to obey, but do we live it out? If love is indeed the greatest of faith, hope, and love, then shouldn't it be the greatest motivation for everything we say and do in life?
Hey, Doc.
How you doing?
Well, you know, I didn't find anybody like my music and could appreciate it. I mean, faith and hope, they liked it. They didn't love it. No.
Well, look, I wasn't really showing God's love to you with those hurtful words.
No.
I'm sorry.
Really?
Yeah. I'd like to hear your song.
Really?
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear your song.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Rise Above the Hurt. Yeah.
All right, because you begged for it. Okay, you've been begging for it. Here we go. Love protects, love trusts, love hopes, love perseveres, love never, ever, ever fails. Oh, that's sweet.
Isn't that the tune to Love Hurts?
You know what? Love does hurt. Love stinks. But what's love got to do with it when it's
a secondhand emotion?
Get out of my head.
We're done here.
How do you follow that? Those guys got some pretty good wisdom. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words, what? Will never hurt me. What? That is the worst statement ever made, right? I mean, I get the reasoning behind it. We say that to help our children get over hurtful words when things are said to them that harm them. But the reality of that statement is so far from the truth, right? Words hurt. They can harm us deeply. You know, Laura was one of those girls that just didn't fit in school, you know? She was always alone. She didn't have any really close friends at all. She wasn't considered to be friendly or pretty or have an outgoing personality. Her skin complexion wasn't real clear. She never seemed to wear fashionable clothes. She always had this just real, you know, bland, ordinary haircut. Her least favorite time of the day was lunch. She hated going to lunch at school, walking into the crowded cafeteria. She didn't have any friends, so she didn't ever know where she was supposed to sit, and she always felt awkward and out of place, and she could have avoided that a half hour of the day, she would have done it. And you're probably aware of this, that kids can be pretty mean. And Laura was often the brunt of their jokes. She was called some pretty cruel names that I couldn't repeat here. And they were deeply wounding to her. I mean, she developed this tough exterior personality where she tried to make it appear like those things didn't bother her, but each insult, each time she was teased, it caused a bleeding in her soul. And it became like she almost embraced that character that was forced upon her by her peers, where she almost seemed to go out of her way to make sure that she wasn't fitting in and that she wasn't considered what other students in the school would have been considered normal. It was normal for Laura to go an entire day at school and never say one word out loud, not even in class. And I don't know, you'd think that there'd be some kids in the school that would pick up on it, you know? That would pick up on the loneliness, that would pick up on the pain in her life, that would pick up on the abuse and would seek to defend her or step in and befriend her. But at least to my knowledge, no one ever did. And she lived life alone. And one day after school, she took a whole bottle of prescription pills that belonged to her mother. And she ended her life. Laura was 13 years old, and I went to school with her. And now, some 40 years later, I still look back on that situation, and I go, how could I have been so self-absorbed and so superficial and so calloused that I didn't notice what was going on in her life? But if I did, I chose to ignore it. Her parents found a diary, and it chronicled her pain, it chronicled her loneliness, her hurt, and it detailed some of that. It also contained some incredible, incredible drawings. A lot of them had a common theme of a girl in a pretty dress sitting in some sort of a tranquil scene, like by a pond or by flowers. The talented dream of a lonely teenage girl. Who would have known? I don't think anybody in our school knew. And I wonder what could have been, right? What could have been? How God could have used her life. And I've learned through that experience, even at a younger age, that sticks and stones might break my bones, but words can even kill. Right? It can be that big of a deal. And I want to talk to you today about the danger of words. And I'd like to read to you a passage from the Bible. It's James chapter 3, and we're going to be pretty much in that entire chapter here this morning. And I want to read a good chunk of that to you. It's really long, so I hope you can stay with me. I'm reading to you from the Message translation. And the reason for that is I think this is a passage that can be a little bit familiar to us. And so I want to put it in a translation that might make it appear fresh to us. And so that's why I chose the Message. And it'll be on the screen. It's also in your notes if you want to follow along. Here's what James writes. He says, "A bit in the mouth of a horse controls the whole horse. A small rudder on a huge ship in the hands of a skilled captain sets a course in the face of the strongest winds. A word out of your mouth may seem of no account, but it can accomplish nearly anything or destroy it. It only takes a spark, remember, to set off a forest fire. A careless or wrongful placed word out of your mouth can do that. By our speech, we can ruin the world, turn harmony to chaos, throw mud on a reputation, send the whole world up in smoke and go up in smoke with it, smoke right from the pit of hell. This is scary. You can tame a tiger, but you can't tame the tongue. It's never been done. The tongue runs wild, a wanton killer. With our tongues, we bless our God and Father, and with the same tongues, we curse the very men and women He made in His image. Curses and blessings out of the same mouth. My friends, this can't go on. A spring doesn't gush fresh water one day and brackish the next, does it? Apple trees don't bear strawberries, do they? Raspberry bushes don't bear apples, do they? You're not going to dip into a polluted mud hole and get a cup of cool, clear water, are you?" Well, you know, you got to love the writing of James, right? Like, I read the Apostle John, I read the Gospel of John, or I read 1 John and just the love that John communicates, and I feel like after I read those passages that John just wants to come up and give me a big hug, right? John feels like a hugger to me, you know, just communicating the love of God for us and the love that we should have for Him and the love that we should have for each other. James is a whacker. I read James and I feel like he wants to pick up a 2x4 and whack me upside the head. You know, he's direct, he's blunt, he's right to the point, he doesn't pull any punches. And he was actually the brother of Jesus. He was the half-brother of Jesus. He was the son of Mary and Joseph. He was probably the second son born to Mary. And you kind of can see some, maybe some family resemblance between James and Jesus, like when Jesus flipped over the money tables, right? Or when he challenged the Pharisees and called them whitewashed tombs and brood of vipers. You know, when it came time for Jesus to tell it like it is in a blunt and, you know, in-your-face way, Jesus did it. And you kind of see the similarities here in James. And he doesn't hold back on his teaching of the danger of words. And he paints a graphic picture for us of the damage that they can cause. I want you to listen to this verse here because we're going to come back to it later. I want you to hear the Apostle Paul's take on it, and he's going to come at it from the opposite angle. This is what he says. "Let everything you say be good and helpful, so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them." I read you that voice because that ought to be the goal of all of us as followers of Jesus, right? We ought to want our words to be good and helpful and encouraging. Can I shoot kind of straight with you here today? A lot of Christians fail miserably when it comes to their words. And before I start pointing the finger at anybody, I have to acknowledge that I have done that often in my life as well. I have failed so often with my words, and there have been a lot of experiences in my life, more than I would be comfortable in naming, where I've had to go back to people and eat a lot of crow and apologize for the things that I have said. So here's the deal on this one, kind of before we jump into what James has to say, and it's this. We all say things that are hurtful, and we all say things that we regret from time to time. And in those circumstances, we need to be quick to acknowledge our failing, and we need to be quick to make things right. But here's the deal, and here's where James is kind of driving here. If harmful words become a pattern in our life, then we have a serious, serious issue that needs to be confronted. James actually says, if you have this issue in your life, it's a major issue. He describes it as a forest fire because it causes crazy damage, it spreads so quickly, and it's almost impossible to contain. Remember some of the images from Gatlinburg, Tennessee, just not that long ago? I got a couple pictures here from I love Gatlinburg. I've been there several times. And that was a forest fire that burned thousands of acres and cost millions and millions of dollars in damage. And it was set on fire intentionally, unfortunately, by a teenager, just with a single, like James says, spark. And it caused incredible damage. It was almost impossible to stop and to contain. And James uses that illustration to describe the danger of harmful words. He says, that's destructive. It's that uncontainable. It's that frightening. So let's look at what James says about the danger of words. I got a few things I want us to consider. The first one's pretty obvious. Number one there. It says, words can cause deep hurt. Deep hurt. That sticks and stones can break my words, but words can never hurt me, you know? I mean, that is just as far from the truth as possible. Words can cause deep hurt. And if you're human and you're breathing, you've experienced that, right? It's happened to you. James says in verse 3 here, a word out of your mouth may seem of no account, but it can accomplish nearly anything. Or destroy it. I like the way that he puts that there. He's giving us both the opportunity to see both sides. He's saying you can say something that can have such power and such effect that it could accomplish almost anything. Something that can encourage someone. Someone that can prod someone toward being a better person. Someone that can actually, you could say something that could actually lead somebody into the kingdom of heaven. Or you can say something that totally destroys someone. And hurtful words are painful because we have these things called emotions, right? I mean, if we didn't have emotions, words wouldn't hurt. For you Star Trek, the Next Generation fans out there like me, there's a character on there called Data. He's an android. He's not a human being. He doesn't have feelings. And there's a lot of times in the show where people say things that are hurtful and kind of mean to Data. Then they apologize. Oh, I'm so sorry if that hurt your feelings. And he goes, you didn't hurt my feelings. I don't have any. And there are times in my life where I'm like, I wish that was true of me. But because we're human beings and we're created with emotions, we get wounded. And we get wounded by words. Now, I'm one of those people that I'll tell you, I tend to have pretty thick skin. I do. Words roll off me pretty quickly. I know that not everybody's wired that way. People are wired differently. Some people are wired the opposite of me. But that's been the case with me pretty much. And that's been actually a really helpful thing when I spent almost 25 years in youth ministry. Can I tell you that words roll off me because I faced my share of criticism when I've been in youth ministry before. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know. And that's not to say that sometimes criticism isn't helpful and doesn't help us to improve, because it does. But, you know, a couple of years ago, someone said something to me that was pretty hateful. It was actually something that was intensely personal to me that I had shared with this friend in a moment where I was being vulnerable and I needed support. And it was thrown back at me months later in a really hateful way. And that wounded me deeply. And even though this friend, I mean, not even 24 hours had passed, and this friend came back to me and apologized and said, what I said was wrong, it was inappropriate, would you please forgive me? And I did. I said, I accept your apology. But even though I was able to say that to him, can I tell you that still over 3 years later, it today, even today, affects my relationship with that person. Our relationship isn't the same. I'm guarded around him. I'm careful about the things that I say to him. And why is that? It's because I don't want to be wounded that way again, right? James reminds us in this passage that words can be destructive to others. Be destructive. You know, I had a coach in high school that was a master at destructive words. And he was convinced that If he used words in a destructive way, he would motivate his athletes to perform better. I just thought that was the norm. I didn't realize until I went to college that athletics could actually be fun, that you could actually enjoy them, that it could actually be a relational experience. I didn't know that until I went to college. And it wasn't until probably a decade later, I was looking back on my life in high school, that I realized how deeply that coach damaged my self-esteem when I was a teenager. And I can tell you, it led me to say, if I am ever a coach, which I have been, I want to take the opposite approach. I want to encourage people first. I want to be known as a coach that believes in and encourages his athletes. Here's your next blank. Our words are just as powerful as our actions. And I think we often misinterpret that. We often don't recognize the fact that our words are just as powerful as what we do. And it can have a deep effect on other people, both for the positive and for the negative. Here's the second one, the danger of words. Words can get out of control quickly. Have you ever experienced that one? Something getting out of control quickly. You know, when I was 12 years old, I grew up in Lexington, Kentucky. And in my neighborhood, we had the biggest backyard in the whole neighborhood. And that was great because all the kids wanted to come play football and stuff in our neighborhood. At the end of our neighborhood, we had about an 8-foot deep ditch. On the other side of the neighborhood was a train track. It was a switch track. And so trains didn't go by there often, and they went by kind of slow when they did go by. And it was a great place to play when you were a kid. Kids don't do that, though, okay? I get it. It wasn't safe, okay? But it was an adventure land, all right? And it was fun to put pennies on the track and wish them gets, you know, smashed into saucer size, you know, and to see the trains going by. And one day I was there with myself and two of my friends, and we're playing on the train tracks. We actually were setting off some fireworks. It was around 4th of July. And we didn't know that the rail company had come by, and they had sprayed something on the tracks called creosote. It's incredibly flammable. And it started a fire on the train tracks. Train tracks are on fire. The railroad ties are on fire. And my friend David tries to be a community hero, right? And he tries to stomp out the flames. Before you can snap your finger, he's on fire. I mean, from feet to head. As a 12-year-old, I'm just shrieking for my parents, right? Fortunately, my other friend was... he reacted in a crisis situation way better than I did because he tackled David. He got him down on the ground. He rolled him around. He was able to get the flames out. And unfortunately, though, David had third-degree burns from his waist down. He had to have multiple skin graft surgeries. It was a 2-year process for David to find healing. That affected me in so many ways as a child. And it happened like that. I mean, it was instantaneous, no warning, no way to be prepared for it. And that's how James describes hurtful words. He said they come at us without any warning. We're not prepared for it. And suddenly we're aflame. We're in the middle of the blaze. And it's out of control. And the damage is deep. And whether it's hurtful words that wound or whether it's in the form of gossip, oftentimes, it starts relatively small, but it can get out of control quickly. By the way, let's define gossip here, because gossip's certainly part of hurtful words. Your next blank is this. Gossip is talking about a person to another person in a harmful way. That's gossip. Here's the measuring stick on this one. If you wouldn't say something in front of the person that you're talking about, to someone else, then you shouldn't say it at all. I mean, that's the measuring stick on this one, right? You know, if you were able to say, you know, like, man, you know, that Doc Holliday, he is a great guy. He loves the Lord. He loves people. I love how he uses his gifts in the church to make our church better. I love that guy. Doc's not going to mind if people say that about him. He's going to appreciate that. He's going to say, well, I love that people see that in me. But if somebody says that, you know, hey, you know that Doc Holliday? I think he might have anger issues. I mean, I saw him interact with a colleague at work. Wasn't good. He probably wouldn't appreciate that, right? So we take that approach of saying, man, if I wouldn't say that, and by the way, Doc's a great guy. He doesn't have any anger issues. Okay, so I should ask you if I could use your name. Is that okay? Is it too late now? That's kind of a rule in our house with the kids. Dad, ask. But there's a snowball effect to gossip. It grows, and it becomes this awful, out-of-control animal. Here's how James describes it, verses 5 and 6. He says, it only takes a spark to set off a forest fire. A careless or wrongly placed word out of your mouth can do that. By our speech, we can ruin the world, turn harmony to chaos, throw mud on a reputation, send the whole world up in smoke, and go up in smoke with it. Smoke right from the pit of hell. Strong words. There's the 2x4, right? Two quick points I think James is making in these two verses here. First one is this: harmful words cause disunity. He writes, by our speech we can ruin the world, turn harmony to chaos. You know, Proverbs 6 says, there are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to him. There's a list. And the last one on the list is this: a false witness who pours out lies and a person who stirs up conflict in a community. That's gossip. And why does the Lord detest it so much? Because he knows the damage it causes to community. That's why. Listen to this proverb. Proverbs 16:28. A troublemaker plants seeds of strife. Gossip separates the best of friends. Have you seen that happen? I've seen that happen, sadly. I think maybe in ministry, because I'm privy to things about other people's relationships with other people that maybe others wouldn't, I have seen this to be so true. I've actually seen best friends severed over harmful words. I've seen family members sever relationships over this. It's devastating. Harmful words destroy community. Here's the next one. Harmful words can cause wrongful perceptions. He says here, words can destroy someone's good reputation. That can be so true. You know, I was in a staff meeting once, not here at another church, and somebody in that staff meeting had personal information about somebody in our denomination who was a leader in our denomination that wasn't a good thing in that person's life in their past, and they shared it in front of the entire staff team. And there was no reason to do that. Nobody there needed to know that. And this person that is a leader in our denomination, is still a leader in our denomination, is still having high impact for the kingdom of heaven. Suddenly, everybody's perception of this person changed, right? It suddenly was skewed. And it was something that happened way back in the past that no one even needed to know about. That's what James is saying here. He's saying, man, you get words out of control. You throw mud on a reputation. And he actually says, man, that type of behavior comes from the very pit of hell. And I think what he's saying here is, this is about as bad as it gets. And he's saying, avoid that trap of the enemy. You see, it's a trap of the enemy because God is the God of unity. And Satan is the ruler of disunity. And so he wants to create disunity and disharmony in any way that he possibly can. And James is saying, avoid that trap of the enemy. He's trying to trip you up that way. Here's the third one. Everyone is capable of saying hurtful words. Now, even as I say that, I know for some of you, this is pretty stinking far from your nature, all right? Because you're just a super kind person. That's your nature, is just to be a kind person. It's not your nature to be, you know, mean to other people or say hurtful things. Can I tell you that so describes my wife, okay? She's just a kind person, and she doesn't say hurtful things about other people, not easily. But can I tell you that she's not perfect in this? And sometimes she does, even though, dear, I can't think of any specific examples, okay? Because James is reminding us that all of us can get tripped up this way. Here's how he describes it, verses 7 and 10. He says, this is scary. You can tame a tiger, but you can't tame a tongue. It's never been done. The tongue runs wild. It's a wanton killer. With our tongues we bless our God and Father. With the same tongues we curse the very men and women he made in his image. Curses and blessings out of the same mouth. Here's what James is saying here. He's saying, listen, everyone is at risk. Everyone is at risk. We can all hurt people with our words. Here's the reality check. You can't afford to think that your tongue is safe. You can't. We need to evaluate everything that we're going to say. Do you know what can be one of the most damaging attitudes in sports? Overconfidence. Overconfidence has led to more upsets in sports than any other. Can I tell you, I am terrified, literally. I shouldn't be, but I am terrified that my Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be overconfident on opening day just because the Cleveland Browns are 1-31 in the last 2 years. I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to throw this out because I think my team is going to make a Super Bowl run. I think my team could lose to the Browns this year in opening day. I do. And part of that is overconfidence. We can't afford to take that approach in any area of our life. And I think God is using James here to warn us to not get overconfident in this area of our life, because the enemy, he'll use that against us. And again, some of us are more susceptible to this than others, but everyone can mess up in this area. Here's number four. Hurtful words can damage our ability to serve God. Verses 10 through 12. James writes, my friends, this can't go on. A spring doesn't gush fresh water one day and brackish the next, does it? And then the last verse there. You're not going to dip into a polluted mud hole and get a cup of clear, cool water, are you? I think what James is saying, he's saying, listen, how can God use you when he wants you to give clear, cool water and there's a polluted mud hole in your heart? I think that's what he's saying. He's saying, man, God wants to use you as a disciple of Jesus to be about the same things that Jesus was about, right? Remember Jesus in John chapter 4 with the woman at the well, right? Remember that story? And he says, I could give you a water that would keep you from ever thirsting again. And she's like, sir, give me this water, right? She comes into a relationship with Jesus and her whole village does as well. That's what God wants of us. He wants us to give that living water to others. And James is saying, you're going to be ineffective that way. If your words are damaging words, then God can't use you the way that he would desire to use you. Can I tell you that I have totally, over the years in ministry, bypassed asking some people to serve in some areas of ministry because I was afraid of what they'd say. Totally done it. I've had people that were talented and were gifted, and I looked at them and said, man, I think they could do a great job in that area, but there have been times in their life where I've heard them say things about other people in such a way that I'm going, I'm not going to take the risk. And in my last ministry, we had to fire a youth pastor because of it. Without doubt, the worst ministry experience I've ever had in my life. He's a good friend. But his words had become so damaging that the only way to hopefully provide any kind of healing in the ministry was to remove him. And it stunk. You know, any type of sin, this one included, if it takes root in our heart, it damages our relationship with God. And this one in particular, it harms our kingdom effectiveness. So let's wrap up here. I want to give you some action steps to think through when it comes to words. What are some steps that we can take to try to make sure that we're doing as well as we can in this area? Here's the first one. Think before you speak. Now, I know that seems obvious, but here, just slow down. Try to spend some time thinking through what you're going to say. And this especially applies in some sort of a confrontation, right? Where somebody gives you a reason, right, to come back. Just slow down. Can I tell you this? Never, ever, ever, ever send an email, text, post a Facebook post or a Twitter, okay, a tweet, all right, without waiting at least an hour before you do that. Never do that. Resist that urge so that you can think through. Just slow down. And texting, oh, that can be the worst, all right? Can I give you this piece of advice here? Texting. Use it for these purposes. Telling your spouse you love them, telling your kids when to get home, and reminding someone to pick up milk. There you go. All right, that's what you could use texting for. And I know I'm stepping on some millennial toes here maybe, okay, when I say this, but texting is a poor conversational tool, all right? It is. Be careful. Slow down. Here's the next one. Ask yourself, is what I'm saying benefiting me or someone else? What do I mean by that? Here's what I mean. If it's making someone else look bad, it's probably seeking to make you look good. So just don't say it. And I know that we don't think usually in those terms. We don't really think, oh, I'm going to zing Jody here so that, you know, I feel a little bit better. But we don't tend, it's not the way our mind works. But it's usually, I got something on someone else, right? But I've never done that. Just don't say it. Here's the next one. Ask yourself, is this a third party conversation? In other words, am I talking to someone about someone else? Never do that. Seek to avoid that. Unless it's overwhelmingly positive, all right? And then here's the next one. And I really believe in this one. I believe this one can apply to so many areas in our life and can really help us live a God-honoring way. Always, always, always take the high road. I really believe that God blesses that when we do that. In other words, here's what I'm saying. Never stoop to another person's level. Just try not to do that. A while ago, someone mentioned to me that someone was saying some things about me that were negative. And as soon as they got done saying that, I pointed out to that person a couple of things that I really appreciated about the person who had said those things about me. So, you know, I'm sorry, I wish they hadn't said that. But can I tell you, I really appreciate this about them. And why is that? It's because I don't want to, first of all, I don't want to be lumped into a character thing or and get drugged down to somebody else's level, right? I don't want to do that. I don't want that to be associated with me. And I also want to live out that verse that Paul said, let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words may be an encouragement to those who hear them. And that doesn't mean that I might not have a conversation with the person who, you know, that might happen at some point. But it needs to be kind. And then here's the last one. It's by far the hardest. If you've wronged someone with your words, go make it right. Can I say this? Even if you didn't start it. And I don't have time to really kind of dig into this one here, but Jesus addressed it specifically in his Sermon on the Mount. That you need to, even if you're not the person who initiated the confrontation or the ugly words or whatever happened, Jesus is saying, if you're a follower of me, you take the step to go make it right. And that's no fun. I can tell you, I told you earlier, I've eaten a lot of crow in my life. Where I've had to go, oh man, I really messed that up. Try to make it right. Listen to what James says as he wraps up. Verses 13 through 18, and I'm just going to kind of read this to you. I want you to just kind of think this through. Just kind of let it marinate in your heart here. Do you want to be counted wise? To build a reputation for wisdom? Here's what you do. Live well. Live wisely. Live humbly. It's the way you live, not the way you talk, that counts. Mean-spirited ambition isn't wisdom. Boasting that you are wise isn't wisdom. Twisting the truth to make yourselves sound wise isn't wisdom. It's the furthest thing from wisdom. It's animal cunning. It's devilish conniving. Whenever you're trying to look better than others or get the better of others, things fall apart and everyone ends up at each other's throats. Now grab this. Real wisdom God's wisdom begins with a holy life and is characterized by getting along with others. It is gentle and reasonable, overflowing with mercy and blessings, not hot one day and cold the next, not two-faced. You can develop a healthy, robust community that lives right with God and enjoys its results only if you do the hard work of getting along with each other, treating each other with dignity, honor, and respect. Here's the bottom line. We looked at this earlier. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. Can we do that? Can we seek to live that out in our lives? Say, that's the approach that I want to take. Whether it's with, I don't know, somebody that takes my parking space at Walmart, whether it's a family member, whether it's somebody in the church, whether it's my next door neighbor who blows his leaves and grass clippings in my lawn every week, right? Can we try to take that approach and say, I want my words to be helpful and encouraging? And how could God use that for growth in our lives and for expanding his kingdom? Let's pray. Lord, I want this to be true in my life. I really do. I pray that it would be true in ours. And I thank you, Lord, for the example that you are in this. That even though there were times in your ministry here on earth, Jesus, that you had to be direct and honest and blunt, you were always loving and kind. That even while you were hanging on the cross, one of the prayers that you uttered was that God would forgive those who were harming you. When anyone in this world would say that, I don't think you had to say that prayer. But even in your death, you used your words for kingdom purposes. May that be true of us, I pray. In Jesus' name, amen.